Hello and welcome to episode 16 of the DX Mentor Podcast, the expedition to Ducey Island. Thank you for joining us. This episode is sponsored by ICOM America, makers of the finest radios and accessories for your amateur radio station, by DX Engineering, one of the best one-stop shopping destinations for all things amateur radio, including technical information, and by the Daily DX, the best source for real-time DX information. This episode is also sponsored by the Southwest Ohio DX Association, one of the premier DX clubs in the nation. I'm Bill, age 8B, the DX Mentor. My guests are DX gurus that we can all learn from. Before we begin, however, I wanted to acknowledge an achievement of a good friend of mine. Bob, who is now K8 Alpha Alpha Charlie, has upgraded from Tech to General. Congratulations, Bob. I hear in the grapevine that Bob is also currently studying for his extra, and he already has that scheduled, and I'm sure he's going to do well. I'm looking forward to passing the DX bug along to Bob, and I hope that happens quickly. Well done, Bob. Secondly, I wanted to mention a project that I am involved with. There is a weekly podcast entitled This Week in Amateur Radio that has a DX section that's hosted by yours truly. I'd love to have you give it a listen and let me know what you think. I'm always looking to make it better or add other information. In this episode of the DX Mentor, we will attend a detailed discussion on the recent de-expedition to Ducey Island. This was a historic event because it was the first major de-expedition to a location using the quote rig in a box or RIB. It also utilized operators from all over the world, working hams from all over the world. My guests are Greg, W6IZT, Don, N1DG, Hal, W8HC, and Joe, W8GEX. So let's tune into our gurus and get some more details on this momentous event. Well, good evening and welcome to the DX Mentor Podcast. I'm Bill, age 8B, your host, and I can't tell you how excited I am tonight. Very few of us get to see something that just gets the creative juices and the technical juices flowing and then has a chance to talk about it. And that's the seat I'm in tonight. What we're going to do is talk about the most recent Ducey Island de-expedition, which in itself was very well done, very well conducted, and very successful. But on top of it, it was done with a concept called rig in a box. And I'm not going to share any more with that until we get to the right people. But we've got just a great group of people tonight. We've got Joe, W-A-G-E-X. And Joe, if you can just take a minute and tell us about yourself, we'll go around the circle here.
Well, I'm Joe, W-A-G-E-X. Been a ham 53 years and been a DXer since day one. I'm absolutely in love with DXing. And this rig in the box that we're going to talk about tonight is just blows my mind. It's the best thing next to sliced bread. So I'll leave it at that and spend all of our time talking about it, Bill.
All right. And then we have Hal, W8HC. Go ahead, Hal.
Yeah, I'm Hal, W8HC. I'm in St. Albans, West Virginia. I've been licensed ham since 1967. And I was bitten by the DX bug, I guess, in the early 80s. And actually, I didn't realize I could work DX until I worked some DX. And from that point forward, it was like, I really liked it. So I had opportunity to actually be DX as I later in my career. And thanks to Joe Pater, he hooked me up with the Swains Island NH8S de-expedition in 2012. Was my first major de-expedition. And anyway, from that point forward, I've been very fortunate to go on several de-expeditions and been involved with the Radio in a Box project with Greg and George AA7JV for about the last 3 years, and had an opportunity to do some work down in the Bahamas with C6AGU with the guys and do some of the early work with it. So I'm just really happy to see that we're now using it in the expeditions application. So anyway, I'm happy to be here, Bill. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, sure. And then we have Don, N1DG or N1 Doggone, I think it is. Don, go ahead.
Thanks, Bill. I'm happy to be here too. And I'm N1DG Don. I was licensed in 1962. My dad was a ham So I started out using not your normal novice and general equipment. My dad had a monobander on 20, and I got bitten by this DX bug early in the 1980s. I was traveling to Dubai a lot, and I managed to get on the air there and become the DX. And that was a real eye-opener and a lot of fun. So I've been on about a dozen de-expeditions since. When we were on Baker Island, we came up with the idea of the rig in the box because we wanted to have a couple of the operators on the boat and not have to go over the reef. We learned a lot. We never did get it working on the Baker trip, but when George came back, that was his primary focus, and it's been quite a ride.
All right, great. And then finally, Greg, W6IZT. Welcome aboard, Greg.
Thank you, Bill. Good evening, good afternoon all. Wherever you may be, I'm Greg, W6IZT. It is a pleasure to be here. I've been licensed for 55 years, and I've been chasing DX for about 37, 38 years, and including contest trips and holiday trips. Ducey was my 31st de-expedition. And first conversation with George about the rib took place right after they got back from Baker at Dayton. And we started talking about this about 4 years ago, and it's starting to come to fruition with the assistance and sponsorship of the Northern California DX Foundation. And our first trip out to start working with the ribs was just over 3 years ago to C6AGU. Made a number of trips there. Things have evolved quite a bit. You know, it started out with operators on the boat and remoting to the island. And then we started working on possibly using cellular networks for access. That didn't work out too well. And then last summer, around 4th of July, we went out to the Bahamas with George and team, and we had Starlink, and quickly realized that was going to be a game changer. So the scope of the project got a lot broader, and it's actually much more exciting. And, you know, what we've got together now, what we've proven is being not only feasible, but very efficient in terms of operating, I think is the beginning of a lot of good things to come. And Ducey was more of a proving ground, a test, and couldn't be happier with the way that worked out.
Okay. Well, I'd like to split this into like three parts if we could. I know from emails I've gotten and stuff, we get a lot of young people, younger hams interested in DX, but they're certainly not at the level that you all are. So let's talk about Ducey Island itself. And all of you are experts in all this, so I'm not going to throw it at anybody. I'll just let somebody start off. You know, where is Ducey, and why did you pick Ducey?
So Ducey is approximately 3,400 miles west of South America. If you draw a line due east from Ducey, it's about 3,400 miles. And it's about 3,700 miles northeast of New Zealand. It's a small atoll, about 2 square miles in size, and that is including the lagoon. So as far as land, it's really very small.
So why would you pick Ducey to try this?
So it's an interesting story. We talked about Ducey last summer out in the Bahamas, and, you know, George kind of said, well, it's too cold, you know, and I said, well, okay. On April 17th, I got a text message from George. He was out in French Polynesia, and said, what about Ducey? And I said, well, he asked me if I could get a license and a landing permit, and I'm fortunate enough to have established some lasting relationships with the folks on Pitcairn who control the landing permits for Ducey, and then also some folks in New Zealand who control the licensing. So the process started on the 17th of April, and in less than 2 months we were on the island, which is kind of unheard of in de-expedition timeline terms. And it was the boat was in the area, Ducey was accessible. And those were the two cornerstones that kind of got this process moving forward.
So right away, there's a major benefit of this approach, right? Because Don, I've heard you talk about the expedition pulling things together and funding and everything else. You normally can't do something like this in 2 months.
No, and because we were self-funded, Greg getting the license, George having a boat relatively in the area, and Ducey is 56 on the most wanted.
Okay.
So it was a good target, and the pileups were insane.
And now let's hear a word from one of our newest sponsors.
Hey, Bob, I heard a rumor that you're now a licensed ham. Is that true?
That is true. I'm very excited. I passed the test 2 weeks ago and just received the call sign of Kilo Echo 8 Yankee Sierra Romeo.
That's great. KE8YSR. Congratulations.
I appreciate that. I hadn't studied really for anything in many years. So I tell you, it was a little bit of effort, connecting all the dots, but it was fun. And I was happy and relieved to pass.
Great. Well, what was the hardest part?
Well, there were really two parts. You know, the first part was really just learning all the terms and slang.
I can see that. That's anything you get into, there's a whole lexicon that you have to learn. What was the second difficult part?
Well, you know, now that I have the license, it's the equipment selection. You know, what antennas, what rigs, what frequencies for that matter, what accessories. I want to do it right, but I don't want to have to mortgage the house to do it. On top of that, I'm in an HOA, so that's a special consideration and might affect what kind of equipment. But I'm interested in hearing what your advice is.
Well, when it comes to all of this together, I just have two words, just two. It'll solve all your problems, get all your questions answered independently with technical support to back it up.
Okay, give it to me. What are the two words?
Well, the first one is DX Engineering.
DX Engineering.
DX Engineering is an American company who's committed to serving the ham radio community. At DX Engineering, amateur radio is what they know. From the pleasure of rag chewing to the satisfaction of working a new rare one, they understand your every need for top performing and reliable products. It's impossible to overstate the importance of filling those needs. Even if you're starting your amateur radio journey with a concentration on VHF and UHF, exploring the more local, regional market, et cetera, DX Engineering has the products you will need and the expert advice to help you with your selection. You know, honestly, their goal is simple. Fulfill your needs with the best products and technical support.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm just not sure what facet of ham radio I really want to dive into.
Well, I would say that whether you're answering a distance CQ or you're handling emergency traffic or you're working a parade as a fundraiser, having the proper DX Engineering equipment in your station or on yourself gives you the advantage of being able to hear and be heard as well as possible. The DX Engineering slogan is, the name says it all.
Okay, well, that's one word or phrase, and that sounds like a good one. But what's the second word that you mentioned?
Well, the second one is ICOM. They make the finest radios and accessories for the amateur radio operator. They're great supporters of the ham radio community, and they're sold and supported by DX Engineering.
We're kind of back to that one word or phrase again.
Yeah, it's one word. You're right. DX Engineering. It's the one-stop shop for everything you need. How so it was about 2 months, right? And then how long were you actually active? And then what was the teardown time?
We were active for just under 2 weeks. I think 13 days, if I'm not mistaken. And the teardown time was 90 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I did see in the NCDX newsletter, NCDXF newsletter, I think it was last fall, there was a picture of a landing vehicle, right, that had, it looked like an outboard motor, maybe some wheels, a pontoon, and a couple of ribs, rig in a box, which we'll describe in a minute. So that had to help tremendously. That's another brilliant idea that just gets me excited about this thing. Hal, did you happen to see that?
I haven't seen it in person. This was something that they had added, I guess, within the last year and a half. You know, George and Mike Snow, KN4EEI, worked to design and build this. But I've seen video of them, bringing it on shore down at Wood Key, down in the Bahamas, and it's pretty cool the way it works. I mean, it's a completely self-contained pontoon boat that has two ribs, like you said. I believe it has two of the generators on it, and it has the 900 megahertz link radio system back to a magnet to the vessel. So it's slick as can be as far as taking care of getting two complete ribs onto the island, and which only leaves the setup of the external antennas, the HF antennas that would need to be set up. So yeah, it's quite an amazing addition to the rib concept.
So we've kind of identified the number 55, which is significant, that's for sure, and how long it took and how you guys pulled it off. So let's talk about a rig in a box. What exactly is it?
Okay, I'll field that one. The rig in the box is a, there's actually, call them two versions or two generations now. There's a single radio kilowatt version, and there is a dual radio 100 watt version. So both radios are fully self-contained with a comprehensive monitoring and control system, environmentally controlled, weatherproof, purpose-built to deploy on expeditions where it's prohibited to put up what I like to call a tent city. And a lot of work has gone into in the last 3 years of getting the rigs fine-tuned, but then the whole process or the scope or the methodology of the rib started to encompass the antennas. We've got antennas that one person can deploy in about 10 minutes. We're using antennas designed by Tom N6BT called a V8. And Tom's been very supportive of these efforts. And we learned that if you can get the antenna close to the salt water, you don't need a full-size antenna that takes two guys 4 hours to put up. You can put up something that in other operational scenarios might be somewhat compromised, but because you've got this great ground plane in front of you, you're only losing a couple of tenths of a dB. So some of the secret sauce is, in addition to this shack in a box, radio in a box, rig in a box, a lot of effort's been put into driving efficiencies into powering the ribs. So George implemented, and it's based on supercapacitor technology, these huge capacitors that we think in terms of microfarads. These capacitors are farads, or millions of microfarads. So I think we've got a 38 or 40 million microfarad capacitor on the input to the amplifier. And what this does is it, for a few seconds, those capacitors provide the inrush current to the amplifier. And it gives the generator the opportunity to catch up. So the generators aren't throttling so much. But what we've just quantified on this last trip is the fuel efficiency that we're realizing. We used 1 teaspoon of gasoline for every QSO. And that's about 4 times more efficient than just running a generator, the same type of generator without some power efficiency included, and much more efficient than the brute force way that was done before with 6,000 watt AC alternator type generators that run at full throttle all the time. So smaller footprint, easier to deploy, greener, and the whole process has been driven from the rib across the entire deployment. And it's just amazing how well it works.
Wow. So this is a sealed box, and I'm so fortunate to have been able to see one. And you currently have flex radios in there, I guess, because they're so they're fairly straightforward to remote control. So that's what's on the island. What's actually on the ship then?
So besides the radio and the amplifier, the control circuitry, we've got all the control circuitry runs on a Raspberry Pi. So Warren KD4Z developed the solution using a high-level software programming language called Node-RED. The Pi also provides connectivity for CW side tone. the only way to get side tone back over a remote link is to take it out of the headphone jack, and we put it into the Pi, and then you've got side tone anywhere in the world, whether the operators are local or remote.
Wow.
On the boat, well, we've got a 900 megahertz link between the island and the boat. And I wanted to point out when the radios and the 900 megahertz link are turned up and operating before the RIB transport even leaves the boat. So while they're going to the island, everything is up and running. So when we get to the island, it's just a matter of getting the pontoon boat onto the beach, because it already powered up. The link is already established back to the boat and put up antennas. So it's all about getting things done as quickly as possible. So on the boat, we've got a PC that runs a smart SDR that's talking over this 900 megahertz link to each of the ribs. And then we also have Starlink, which provides connectivity to the remote operators around the world.
And Don, I think the last, this Ducey, you were a remote operator, right? So how was that experience? What did you do to connect? And then how was it?
So it's no different than the people who remote to the superstations in Maine or in Washington. You basically open a client in any desk. It gives you the screen of the PC Greg just mentioned on the boat. The boat PC is already connected to the RIB. It will run N1MM for CW, or it will run WSJTX for FT8. And I must stress, every QSO we will be making with the RIBs is initiated by a human clip. None of the RIBs will ever run using MSHV in auto mode or any of the other auto modes. So it is anybody who has run WSJTX on their screen in their shack, it's no different. I had the early morning shift on the East Coast when the West Coast remote ops were asleep, and you could run two RIBs on two different screens on your PC, and you run FT8 mode, which lets you queue up 10 stations, and you pick who you want to work, and you go back and forth and back and forth. I mean, you can have rates of 300 an hour, having your cup of coffee, reading the morning email, and working yourself from home, because you could have a third station running your own station, so SO3R. We were doing this on Baker, by the way. We had a Digitemp, and we rarely had in the two stations in the Digitemp two ops. We learned early on with FT8, one op can easily run two stations. So, you know, there have been other de-expeditions that run in absent a human mode. We won't do that in any of the DXCC rules say you can't do it anyway, but that doesn't always stop people. So the idea is it was fun. In the beginning of the Ducey pileup, we had five streams running at all times, and we never exhausted the queue. You know, after 10, 12 days, you're going to work a pileup down from just about anything except maybe number one on the wanted list.
Right. What was the was there noticeable latency, or is it pretty?
The latency would come and go. I mean, you always have in the Starlink constellations one bad bird. There was some weather issues during the operation where they had to move the boat further away from the island. But I'd say in terms of latency, it, and Greg can expand on this, latency wasn't the issue. The issue was storms on the island, antennas getting attacked by birds, the normal stuff you have on a de-expedition. You always have weather, whether you're there or remote. But instead of taking 12 people to this island, as Greg said, it was efficient. You didn't need George's boat. You didn't need this massive boat. You could have done this with a much smaller craft because you don't have to put 12 people on a boat. And it's good to have George's boat, but this technology doesn't require it.
So how far off the island are you? Is it, you know, 100 yards or 2 miles or?
We were between a quarter and a half a mile most of the time. Wow. We've tested the link in the Bahamas. We were there for field day weekend and we went to an abandoned island, set up a couple of ribs. And then once we got him up and running, George went diving and I was on the air and he was about four and a half miles away and he dropped anchor and I could hear all this because, you know, you hear it on the boat and I had headphones on, but it never missed a beat. So it works, you know, if the antennas are high enough and you don't have any obstructions, you know, we run quarter mile, half mile off the island, but we could be a mile or a mile or two away and not have any impact in operation.
This sounds like a great time to hear from one of our sponsors.
From base stations to more portable models, ICOM has the best radio for working your favorite bands this summer. Whether outside enjoying sunny skies or inside by the AC, stay cool with ICOM. Explore the world of microwave with ICOM's new SHF portable, the IC905. This all-mode rig covers 2 meters, 70 centimeters, 1.2 gig, 2.4 gig, and the 5.6 gig bands, and with the optional CX10G transverter, 10 gig. This transceiver also has a few industry firsts under its belt. It's the first to support the 5 major global bands from VHF to SHF. The first PoE-empowered RF module designed to be at the base of the antenna to eliminate signal loss, and the first to be compatible with amateur TV and analog FM mode. Other features include
a large 4.3-inch touchscreen color LCD, real-time high-speed spectrum scope and waterfall display, easy digital mode settings, high-performance GPS antenna which is supplied, full D-Star functionality in DV/DD modes, and an SD card slot.
Aim higher and enter the world of SHF. The IC7300 is a high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design that will far exceed expectations. This innovative HF transceiver digitizes RF before various receiver stages, reducing the generated inherent noise in different IF stages. This is the radio that changed the way entry-level HF is designed.
The 7300 includes RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and an SD memory card slot.
The real HF fun starts here. Create your own band opening with the IC9700. This transceiver radio brings direct sampling to the UHF, VHF, weak signal world. This all-mode transceiver is loaded with innovative features that are sure to keep you busy.
These features include a 4.3-inch touchscreen color TFT LCD display with real-time high-speed spectrum scope and waterfall, smooth satellite operation with 99 satellite channels, and dual watch operation and full duplex operation in satellite mode.
Expect top performance with ICOM's IC9700. And let's talk about the IC7610. It is the SDR every ham wants. This high performance SDR can pick out faint signals in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that has changed the world's definition of an SDR transceiver.
The 7610 includes RF direct sampling system, 110 dB RMDR, independent dual receiver, and dual digi select.
For the love of ham radio. For more information about ICOM's amateur offerings, visit icomamerica.com/ amateur.
Bill, Joe, I got a question.
Yeah, I thought so. Go ahead.
We've been talking a lot about George, so I wonder how could you tell us a little bit about George's background as far as ham radio?
You want to stab that, Don, or Hal?
I mean, I know a little bit about it. I'm sure Don probably knows more than I do. Oh. But you know, he's from Hungary, and he had a license when he was young, when he lived in Hungary, as I recall. Do you want to elaborate on it, Don?
Sure. George walked out of Hungary during the revolution, in, I believe it was in the 80s, maybe. And he migrated to Australia. And there he set up various firms. He's an inventor, as the rig shows. And one of his big inventions was a company called Hyperterm. And every time you swipe your credit card, that's a Hyperterm terminal. So that company was sold off. And then he started getting involved in digital payment systems. And that company was bought by Samsung, and it's known as LoopPay, I think, or Samsung Pay.
Yeah, it was LoopPay, and it's now Samsung Pay. Right.
So
he invented, cooler background. Go ahead, Don, I'm sorry.
Right. So he then had a second successful business opportunity, and he's now still working part-time for Samsung. But now he's enjoying the fruits of his labor, and he built a boat. And when he designed this boat, from the get-go, it was to go on de-expeditions.
Wow.
And so he'll be out in the Pacific for about 2 years.
Yeah, he closed the Samsung deal while we were on Navassa.
So he also developed the amphibious vehicle that they take ashore.
Yes, he and Mike built it from scratch.
Yeah.
Okay. And the idea was the generators stay on it, the fuel stays on it, and that's very important for people like U.S. Fish and Wildlife. This is totally self-contained. You don't have generators spread around the island. You know, we had 800 feet of footprint on Baker. 800 feet from top to bottom. We had 6 sleeping tents. We had 3 operating tents. We had generators all up and down the coast. We had antennas all up and down the coast. And now we can apply for a permit with none of that. No latrines, no cooking areas, no twice or 3 times a day trips over the coral reef to bring food for the ops and gas for the generators. You know, as Greg said, and on Baker, we were using kilowatt linears. This Ducey operation, which made 62,000 QSOs, 80-odd% of the QSOs were made with 100 watts.
Really?
Actually less. I think actually it was less. I was seeing about 75 or 80 watt output most of the time.
Yeah, but never trust the flex watt meter.
Okay.
even at 80 watts, and that helps that efficiency Greg was talking about.
Absolutely.
I appreciate your comments about George, because we've been talking about George did this and George did that, and I thought it would be interesting for our viewers and listeners that if they had a brief description of George and his part that he's really playing in all this.
That's great. Yeah, thank you. So if we move a little bit further, we can talk about the results. And I think somebody mentioned I guess really it starts with, you know, Greg and Don and Hal. I don't know if you were a remote operator on this one or not.
Yeah, I was.
Okay, would you guys sum this up? This was a successful test?
Absolutely, it was successful. And I credit Don, you know, for his effort in coordinating the operators involvement in this. We had what, 30 some operators?
We had 30 operators from 10 countries. We tried to geographically spread it out. We had a Google Docs spreadsheet where people could sign up what time slots, 2-hour time slots, what band they wanted. Now, conditions change and we weren't always on the bands we signed up for. We were all chatting on Slack. So we had a magnet Slack channel where if you needed to go to the bathroom and you wanted another op to take over, you could put out a call for, you know, emergency relief. If you wanted to change bands, you could chat with the other operators to make sure you didn't QSY. I mean, you knew where the other stations were because all you had to do was look at the cluster. But you'd be amazed how many times two people decided to change bands at the same time and both wound up on 10 meters. And that's not good for equipment.
No. What were the pileups like? I mean, on top of the fact you were number 55 most wanted, they had to be really serious pileups.
So I have a theory. You could put the country number 300 on the air. And if it's a new call sign or something unique like a rib, you're going to get a pileup. Hell, I heard WHGEX on the other day and he had two callers. I mean, I.
Yeah, but it was me and Janet, Don.
Janet was yelling, come for dinner.
Yeah.
So it goes to show you, right?
That's right.
And Joe always said when he gets back from C6, it's like you can't believe it's nonstop.
Yes. So. Yeah. The pileups were insane. As I said, on FT8, we would be on 10 and 12 meters. And on FT8, you're running 5 streams. And the list of callers, you'd never work them all if you were there 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
So without, I mean, I would never want you guys to share like, oh, we found this flaw and it was, you know, serious. But what lessons do you think you came away with after this trip?
It was 100% perfect. We don't have to improve a thing.
Wonderful.
stuff happens. I don't know. I mean, sure. I'll let Greg talk about the equipment. But in terms of operators, we had people miss a shift. Or we had somebody forget that it was their anniversary and stuff. But you have that on the island. I remember when Joe and I were on Midway way back in 2009, we had some guys that would sleep through shifts. It's really not rib related, but Greg can talk about equipment.
Yeah, so Don and I talked after I got back and we came up with some ways to simplify the scheduling a little bit the next time we put one of these together. Everything worked really well. One of the things that I didn't touch on, which is a bit different than what most de-expeditions use, is most de-expeditions have one or two antennas per band. And that's a lot of antennas. Our approach is we have one antenna per radio. The antenna is not resonant, but it has a tuner at the base. So there is an automatic tuner. So you can change bands and the tuner matches the antenna and away you go. But it minimizes the footprint significantly. We had 4 ribs. We had 5 antennas. We had an antenna for 6 meters. So that you always have to have an antenna for 6 meters. You're going to make an effort at that. But one of the things that's also beneficial is those of us who've been on island expeditions where you put the antennas close to the water, the tuning changes as the tide changes. And with the antenna tuners at the base, we mitigate that. So you're not having to worry about where you got the SWR set up for both low tide and high tide. It really simplifies things. And, you know, we could have been on the air probably with one or two radios within an hour of getting on the island. But we wanted to get everything set up because we wanted to minimize the trips back and forth to the boat. And we could only get to the island during high tide. We couldn't get the tender to the island because it was just too shallow.
Let's take a break to learn about the Daily DX.
Hey, I just poured you a cup of coffee. You look pretty happy. How'd you do?
I worked him on the third call. Can you believe it?
You worked him on the third call? Seriously? I thought you just had that little pistol station.
I do, but I have a secret weapon.
A secret weapon? What is it?
Information. I knew when they were on the air, their operating habits. Heck, I even knew the equipment they're using. I just had to be there when they came up on the band. I even beat the spotting network.
Wow, how'd you manage all that?
I get the Daily DX from Bernie, W3UR. In addition to the weekly and daily bulletins, I also receive special notices when things change in real time. I feel that I'm always on top of every de-expedition.
So now you just need to confirm it, right?
Yep, that's it. Bernie even helps me with that, giving me QSL routes and QSL managers if they don't use LOTW. The Daily DX is a DX bulletin sent via email to you Monday through Friday. It includes DX news, IOTA news, QSN reports, QSL information, a DX calendar, propagation forecast, and much, much more. With a subscription to the Daily DX, you will also receive DX news flashes and other interesting DX tidbits. Bernie's been an integral part of my confirming over 300 entities and WAZ while operating a modest station.
W3UR Bernie is the editor, a member of the DX Honor Roll, a member of the 3000 Challenge Club, as well as the editor of the How's DX column in QST. He is uniquely positioned to have his finger on the pulse of the DX community and shares this information weekly. Why not let Bernie be your secret weapon?
You can get a free two-week trial at www.dailydx.com.
Now let's go have that cup of coffee and tune around.
So if someone wanted to see pictures of this or a video of it in operation, et cetera, where might they go?
There are pictures of this on the AA7JV website, QRZ page. We didn't really make videos, but we need to work on that, right, Greg?
Improvement. If you need me and French Polynesia to film, I can make that happen. So Joe will carry my bags. He'll be with me.
We were gonna send Joe with a rib to North Korea.
Oh, you know, he'd go if you could promise him 60 meters. Wow. So I'm just curious what the general ham population, the feedback that y'all have all got, not even just from Ducey, but in general. I know like at the Southwest Ohio Club, we've talked about it a lot and everybody just kind of shakes their head like, man, that is just amazing that they can do that. So have you gotten similar feedback or?
The feedback's been entirely positive. You know, in the 3 years leading up to the Ducey Island trip, there was a lot of skeptics. You know, you're not putting guys on the island. They don't have the camaraderie, this, that, or the other. But this is all about getting permission to go places that we can't get permission to go using conventional methods. The feedback's been very professional, well done, got you on all these bands, amazing technology. You proved it works. I haven't heard of a single instance where somebody said to me, you know, you guys are going the wrong direction or my experience wasn't good. And, you know, at the end of the day, as de-expeditioners, we're all about providing an experience, right?
Yeah.
And the feedback in that respect has been entirely positive.
I think the arguments against remote operation 3 or 4 years ago were much more critical than what people experience now. More and more hams are operating these RHR stations. They're operating from friends remotely. The league has ruled the operator can be on the International Space Station and it counts. So we're not breaking any rules. I guess a metric is deliberate QRM. You see many of the expeditions where somebody doesn't like anything, and they get jammed, they get QRM, people put carriers on or RIDI. There wasn't a lot of this when we were on Ducey. And that shows acceptance by the ham community. There's always some people that said, oh, it's not real radio. But we didn't do automatic FT8. We were operating. People knew we were pushing the buttons. There were hams there. We, as Greg said, we ran it professionally. So I'm not sure everybody out there was happy. But we didn't get hate mail.
Wow.
That's just terrific. So you've all been involved with getting, you know, DXCC, and I'm drawing a blank. They approve your operation, right? Is there
We were approved before we went.
Okay. So did you have to do anything to, I mean, this is going to sound silly, but did you have to do anything to prove you were there? Or it's like, hey, we heard you. We knew where you were. We had all your paperwork ahead of time. You're good.
We gave the league the copies of the Ducey license, the Ducey landing permit from Pitcairn. They gave us a LOTW certificate, you know, and away we went.
Okay. So what, as technology moves on, what would you see as the next addition to the rig in a box? Is it solar powered so you don't need generators? Is it, I mean, I can't imagine how you'd improve it, but I know you guys are thinking.
I'm not sure solar power would work, right, Greg?
Because batteries are too heavy.
Right.
Okay.
And you can't drop these on an island and leave them.
Right.
Again, you put a solar panel on Baker, and within about 4 hours, there's so much bird poop on it that its efficiency is probably about 10%.
And I imagine blowing sand and salt and stuff would deteriorate the surface. And
yeah. The rib wasn't designed for dropping it off on some remote island and having Bouvet on the air for the next 6 years. You know, it's not Voyager 1 or Voyager 2, which are still going 20 years later.
I think you know, like any technology of this sort, you know, it starts at a greater magnitude and tends to shrink. And for me, I see, you know, down the road, this technology getting more compressed and in a smaller package. You know, what's a rib weigh, Greg? About 75 pounds, 70, 75 pounds?
75, 80 pounds, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, I think there's an opportunity to make things maybe compressed. And I don't know if George is working on that, but that would certainly be the direction that I would be going, make these things a little bit smaller, more compact.
Wow.
It's quite a package.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm almost speechless. It's just, it's terrific. And I think it's a great concept. And this is one of the things I always scratch my head when I hear, you know, not the whole ham community is a fan of FT8. And I look at the technology involved in FT8 and the fact that, you know, it wouldn't even have existed, you know, 5 or 10 years ago and what's really behind it. And whether I like it or not, I think you really have to appreciate the innovation, the technology, the intelligence that went into it. And I look at this the very same way, the engineering work and the feedback. And you guys must be a solid team to be able to, I'm sure you'll be able to give feedback without any, you know, no one's going to get their ego bruised. I didn't like this. We need to change it kind of a thing. And I just think that's terrific. And hats off to you for doing this. And to George, I believe there's somebody else I'm leaving out.
Mike.
Yes. Yeah, so hats, kudos to those guys. So I'll go around one more time and just see if you have anything else to add or anything I missed. I don't know what else to say. It's just terrific. Joe, did you have any follow-up questions?
My big question would be, where are you going to go next?
I knew that was
coming. You're allowed to say.
Well, August 21st, North Cook E5. Yeah. And it won't be as big an operation as Ducey. It will be 2 weeks, but it's more just fine tuning the technology and having fun being the DX. Ducey was much rarer. E5 has resident hams, but we'll be on the air from E5 at the end of the month, 21st.
So will you be home or will you be with them, Don?
No, I'm going to be home.
Okay.
The boat will have, the operators will be George, Mike, HA7RY, which is Tomy, who's a childhood friend of George, and a YL operator, HA5, is it AG?
Yeah, I do not know her call sign.
I do. Her name's Gabby. And she is, if I can get to my inbox.
Oh, yeah, this was all announced today.
It was, but they had the wrong call for Gabby.
Oh, did they? Okay. They did.
Let's pause so we can hear from a DX club that is one of our sponsors.
DXing is even more enjoyable when you make connections with other DXers. A major sponsor of this podcast is the Southwest Ohio DX Association, or SWODEXA. SWODEXA is best known for hosting the DX Dinner and DX Forum, as well as the DXpedition of the Year Award. All these DX events are held annually in conjunction with Hamvention and are among the most well-attended and notable DX events of the year. Joining SWODEXA will give you access to a great group of DXers, an informative newsletter, preferred seating at the DX Dinner and the DX Forum, and you will be supporting DXpeditions to the top 50 needed DXCC entities. Check us out at www.swodxa.com and click on the Membership Info tab for more information and a registration form.
They'll be on Penryn Atoll, and it will be HA5YG.
YG, all right.
YG.
Very cool. Anything else, Joe?
Interesting. Oh, this whole thing just blows my mind. I love it. Love it.
I thought you might ask how they would put a can dispenser in a rib in case you had to go to the island, but I'm not going to go there.
A church key on the outside.
All right, Hal, what did I miss?
I think you've covered things pretty well. I guess the only comment that I would have is, my appreciation to Northern California DX Foundation for their backing of this and their support. And it's really been an honor and privilege for me to be a part of this. And, I've just to be around George and be a part of this and watch and learn. It's just been something that just has I can't quantify in words or express myself. How grateful I am to have been a part of this technology, in its infancy. And I just look forward to more opportunities to see it used. It's a great thing for the hobby, and it certainly takes us into the next realm of accessing some of these what I call no-go places. And could you imagine some of the top 10 places like Bouvet or Peter One and some of these places where you could set a rib. And with the advent of Starlink now to have access to operate amateur radio from a remote island like that. So, it's very exciting. I'm happy to be a part of it.
Okay. Don, one of the reasons I joined NCDXF years and years ago, it supports the expeditions, but I really started to rely on the Beacon Network, right? So I would use that to kind of, find out, propagation and because I had limited time and I always felt like, well, I should give them, something back because they're letting me listen to this and they provide it. I kind of look at this the same way. It's like, I think this is such an advancement that it's probably worth, you know, being part of NCDX just to give them a few bucks and to stay up on it. And I think you're somewhat affiliated with the Northern Cal Group, I believe. So you want to take 30 seconds or a minute or something less than an hour to give a little plug here?
Well, NCDXF, of which I'm the treasurer, was started 51 years ago to finance the expeditions. And here we are now, we've given out about $2 million in grants. And it funded the Beacon Network. It has now funded the RIB development. We just announced a plan to give grants for people who can come up with working solutions to track down some of the DQRMers. Funding technology is not anything that's new. Years ago, NCDXF used to provide equipment to hams in countries where they couldn't afford equipment. We no longer do that because we don't have to. Other people donate equipment to clubs and what have you. So providing technology funding has been from the early days of NCDXF. And when we came back from Baker, the board had a meeting about funding what we tried to do on Baker. We provided funds to acquire the equipment, the radios, and everything George needed to make this happen.
Wow, very cool. Well, I certainly will put their link in the show notes. And was that Joe?
I got a question for Greg, Bill.
Okay,
Greg, when you're on the boat, what if anything are you monitoring the ribs on? Temperature, et cetera.
So power output, SWR, AC volts, DC volts, temperature. While we're not using it, the control system in the rib has the ability to send alarms up to a server in the cloud. And we've used this on in the Bahamas, where if anything goes into an alarm, somebody somewhere in the world gets notified and you get a message on your cell phone, whether it's somebody on the boat. We were doing CQ Worldwide one year and Warren KD4Z was here in Atlanta and he was sending me texts every time he got an alarm from one of the ribs. So it's a very comprehensive system. There's a lot more that it's capable of doing. If we wanted to implement that, we've got plenty of horsepower and it's straightforward and effective.
Okay, great. And Don, I wanted to flip back to you because I got you a question to put your NCDXF hat on. Now, let's put your RIB hat on. Was there anything I missed tonight or anything you think we should emphasize more, or did we sum it up pretty well?
I think you got it. I think the proof of the pudding is going to be when the RIB opens the door for U.S. Fish and Wildlife to let us go somewhere that nobody's been to for 15 or 20 years. I'm on a Fish and Wildlife committee out of Hawaii, and I know they're aware of what we're doing. And they think it is the mechanism that will open one of these doors.
Wow.
So stay tuned.
That's terrific.
So the big question would be, Don, what would be your, if you want to answer it, what would be your chosen place to go if you could pick one?
I'm going to choose not to answer it.
Why did I know that? I thought I'd ask.
Okay, Greg, why don't you wrap it up for us? Anything you want to emphasize or?
You know, this is an ongoing project. You know, I got back from Ducey and I kind of was thinking about how this could evolve. And I think that, you know, potentially it could get on a fairly fast track, not unlike the evolution that cell phones went through, where we went through improvements in size and performance and flexibility. You know, there's been a little bit of bantering about FT8. I look at FT8 as a whole new audience of operators. There's guys that you work in significant numbers, thousands, tens of thousands of stations that you wouldn't put in the log if it wasn't for FT8. I remember before FT8, working in an Indonesian station was fairly rare. You can get on any of the bands today and probably work 20 or 30 FT or Indonesian stations in a day. It's really exciting. It's awesome to be a part of this. You know, the team is very functional. I've really enjoyed that when we were on a steep curve of the development and getting things integrated into the solution, but it's also very enjoyable to see all these efforts come to fruition and actually getting, you know, the RIVs on an island, someplace rare, where we're, you know, really proving the concept. You know, I don't know how many trips there's been to the Bahamas, most of them in the winter, doing CQ Worldwide and ARRL 160, but there's been hundreds, if not thousands of hours put into proving this technology. And Ducey was just the first stage, you know, the first, like, not stage of stage one, stage two, but the first operating stage for us to be in to prove that this actually does work well. Starlink exceeded everybody's expectations. I had any desk session open to my home station and it ran for 3 days, which means that we didn't have a Starlink outage in 3 days. And I shut it down because I needed my PC for something else.
Mm. Wow, very good. Well, yeah. I said this twice earlier and I'll say it again. I truly appreciate y'all being part of this. If there's anything that I can do either in getting the word out or through Swedexa or Joe and I can do here in Southwest Ohio, please contact me.
As Joe said, send $50, join CDXF.
You guys have always done anything I ever ask, and all I can do is try to return the favor. So with that, I'll say 7-3s and have a good evening, and thank you again, and please keep me in mind for something we can do.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the opportunity. We appreciate your time.
Do you feel like you learned about a major DX breakthrough? I certainly did. I'm more excited than I was when we started. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the DX Mentor Podcast. I would like to thank our sponsors, ICOM America, The Daily DX, DX Engineering, and the Southwest Ohio DX Association. You won't find anyone more committed to DX than these sponsors are. And I would certainly like to thank our gurus on this podcast, Greg, W6IZT, Don, N1DG, Hal, W8HC, and Joe, W8GEX. I would love to have your feedback, answer your questions, and provide help with any DX or amateur radio issues that you may have. If you need clarification on something or you just have a question, email me at thedxmentor@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter using thedxmentor as the handle. You can watch this presentation on YouTube under the DX Mentor channel. Please drop me a line if you've achieved an all-time new one, received recognition, or you have a DX event that you would like us to mention, much like Bob, K8AAC, did. I would be happy to make everyone aware of it. 7-3 for this episode, and thanks to my XYL, Karen, for her love and support.